This is your Bet the Board Monday podcast edition. Yeah, we took last Monday off to allow us to breathe a bit of a bye week, and I'm coming to you from freezing Nashville, where, Payne, I'm sure you're going to have some great wisdom to share with our listeners regarding the Monday night showdown between Pittsburgh and Tennessee later this evening.
We'll see what we can do. The Bet the Board marketing dollars are very rich. We've been able to do this live from the Monday night football game, it seems.
Hey, you know, we're trying to expand our boundaries. College Game Day took them a few years before they went live to venues, so we figured we'd try and do the same. And what a glorious day to do it when it's 26 degrees expected at game time with, what, 13-mile-an-hour crosswinds?
That's what it looks like right now for kickoff.
It should be fascinating. But, of course, we'll get to that game at the end of the podcast. But as we always do to start Monday, kind of take a look back at the games that were played yesterday in the NFL, some of the results that surprised us, some of the things that didn't, and more or less grade a lot of these teams. And, Payne, we may as well start with the game on Thursday where the Dolphins beat Buffalo 22-9. We talked about it at great length, said the first half under made a lot of sense from a betting perspective, and you had two different groups warring there. Anything major to take away from Buffalo's ineptitude on the offensive side or the way Miami was able to play without practicing for this particular matchup?
Well, I think it's been the issue with Buffalo all season. They've been pretty decent between the 20s. Get them in the red zone, and they're not very good. They had some ample opportunities in the first half to definitely come away with more points than they did. And, you know, when you talk about that backfield with Dixon and Orton and Bryce Brown, there's just not a lot there. There's not a lot on that offense when you're able to neutralize Sammy Watkins. And right now, Brent Grimes is just one of the best cover corners in football. And he was able to shadow Watkins, and it really made that offense ineffective, essentially just a dink-and-dunk offense where if you keep it in front and tackle, you're going to be okay.
Yeah, and I think so much will be made of the Dolphins. A huge game this week, which we'll talk about more in greater detail on Thursday when they go out to Denver to take on the Broncos fresh off that loss against the Rams. And maybe that's a good place to start. What do we take away from Denver's effort? Third straight road game, third straight time they were favored on the highway and clearly looked to be outclassed by the Rams. Of course, Greg Zuerlein deserves the MVP for what he did with five field goals as the Rams' offense sputtered in the red zone, but didn't need it when you held Denver to just 7 points.
Yeah, it was a great performance from St. Louis. And this is a St. Louis team that hasn't quit. It was an unfortunate loss in Arizona the week prior. Up 14-10, backup quarterback in, 7 minutes to go. You think you probably have that one handled, but they showed resiliency this week. Go to Sean Hill. He was effective early, did enough to manage that offense, and the defense showed up, got some pressure on Manning. This is a defensive line that's got a lot of money invested in it, but it's been much maligned so far this season. But Peyton Manning, the offense, struggled again, and if they're not going, that's the identity of the Broncos. I know they've gotten better defensively, and I thought they played okay defensively, but if Peyton Manning isn't going, the Broncos aren't going anywhere.
And I think it's something to keep an eye on as we try and figure out the status of Emmanuel Sanders moving forward as he goes through the NFL's concussion protocol, along with the much maligned running back position for Denver, who will be without the services of Monte Ball, it looks like, for a little bit more of an extended period as he re-injured that groin. You talk about St. Louis and them being impressive. A game that I thought was pretty impressive that most people didn't pay attention to, a team that you've actually been relatively high on, Tampa goes into Washington and absolutely boat races the Redskins. Josh McCown looks outstanding, but more importantly, Mike Evans accounts for 209 receiving yards of the 288 that Tampa was able to muster. How do we handicap the Bucs, not only for this week for their game against the Bears, which we'll talk about later, but maybe for the rest of the season? Are they a team that we can look to buy as a little bit undervalued potentially?
Unfortunately, I wasn't on Tampa this week. One of the few times we haven't backed them on the road. We had them earlier in the year at Pittsburgh, had them against the Browns. And I'm not a big McCown fan, and that's why I wasn't on them this week. But I like them. I think Sims is a very good back, and they'll get him acclimated a little more. The defense starting to get a little healthier on the defensive line, and it's a pretty solid defensive line. If they can get any offensive line play, they're going to be tough down the stretch. When you talk about this week, though, Lovie Smith back at Chicago, I think that's probably another decent spot to look towards Tampa.
Yeah, a number that's a little bit inflated, of course, as we preview those games in greater details, we can definitely dig deeper. For a team, another team I think that was pretty impressive, the Green Bay Packers. You said it yourself on Thursday, and there was some major resistance in the market. The Mark Sanchez honeymoon ended effectively at Lambeau as the Packers hang a 50 spot for the second straight week, the first time in franchise history they've been able to do that.
As great as that Green Bay offense is, and Aaron Rodgers is the catalyst, clearly, the defense has made great strides, as I alluded to previous weeks. Cornerbacks are now healthy. Clinton Dix just getting better each and every week. And we saw a lot of scheme shifts on the defensive lines. As I alluded to, Matthews, Peppers, they're doing a lot of crazy stuff in their coverage, in their pressure, and we saw Peppers get a pick this week again. That's a tough, tough team moving forward, especially when we talk about them being able to even run the ball a little bit better than they had earlier in the season. Cold weather football, they're going to need Lacy going on offense.
Do we give the Houston Texans an A for their effort coming out of a bye week and Ryan Mallett's debut? And more importantly, how they look defensively, slowing down the Cleveland Browns. Brian Hoyer threw the ball 50 times in that game, and if it wasn't for two J.J. Watt roughing the punter penalties, there's a good chance the Texans pitch a shutout there against Cleveland.
20 completions on 50 attempts. The Brian Hoyer honeymoon, I think, is pretty much over. He is what he is. He's a gritty guy. I just don't know how far they can go with him. We've talked about this Browns team. I don't think they're very good. Texans were in an ideal spot. It'll be interesting to see what Mallett can do moving forward once we get some tape on him. But Texans were the clear-cut right side this past week. It was an absolute blowout, and it probably would have been even more of a blowout had you not had J.J. Watt roughing the punter.
And a little aside here, not so much from an X's and O's football standpoint, more so from the way the market moved. For people that were watching this game, you saw a very sharp move Sunday morning that took the Texans from +4 all the way down to 3. Then with Cleveland being such a public side, there wasn't enough sharp money out there to keep that price down. Number ballooned as high as 4.5, but as we saw, clearly Houston appeared to be the right side. And I guess another game that from a line move standpoint that was interesting, and maybe you can talk a little bit more, what we saw in the Bears game. You saw money coming on Minnesota, take that price as low as 1 on Sunday morning, and then a burial, about a half hour before kickoff for the Bears, ended up closing as a 3-point favorite again.
Yeah, some interesting line moves, and it's always important to remember the NFL is the one market where the public has a voice, where the public can essentially move some numbers. And that's what we saw in the Texans game, as you alluded to. Then we have it late in the Chicago game. Two different groups. Obviously, we had some earlier in the week taking the Vikings. And if you thought there was these internal issues with Chicago, it made sense. There are some internal issues. Chicago still didn't look very good this past week. But there was a buy order sent in on Chicago -1 at kick from a different group. And I think it's one thing to talk about is, when we do these pros versus Joes or the sharps and squares, all the sharp guys aren't having a meeting like the four fathers in a basement and saying, hey, this is what we're doing. We're all going to be on this side. There are going to be differences of opinions, and I can tell you that when we talk about the Thursday night game later on.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that I've definitely done, and I know I sent that tweet out on Sunday, didn't this week, took a bit of a hiatus there, but trying to figure out where there is the most agreement and consensus, and I know a lot of folks will disagree given what the information that we had at our disposal for Sunday night, where we knew the Colts were the side of the professionals, clearly did not look like that on the field. And what did we see from Indianapolis there versus New England and how we view those two teams moving forward?
I think this is why it's one of the tougher teams to gauge for professional bettors is Andrew Luck. It's really a one-man show there. And a lot of times he can put it on his shoulder and overcome, you know, the number. And last night he just couldn't with Brady and Belichick having 2 weeks to prepare. That's really what this came down to. As much as I like Chuck Pagano, I won't bash him. But Bruce Arians, I think, really was the brains of what was going on there. And we saw Belichick just destroy him with preparation when you can take Gray essentially off the Dolphins practice squad and implement him into this game on Sunday Night TV and find an issue, a real tough spot for the Colts defense and just attack it with someone of this caliber skill-wise. It was pretty crazy to see. And when you talk about what that number did, it opened Colts -2, 2.5, went out to 3. That was the clear-cut professional side. I know a lot of other people said that the Patriots were the side. Obviously, at 3, and you're talking 80% of the action, you get Brady and Belichick off a bye, the public was running to bet the Patriots. Now, granted, were there probably some sharp guys on the Patriots? Absolutely. But the biggest groups not only bet the Colts, they bet them pretty heavy. And even at 3 before kick, we saw this go as high as -3, -15. If that number holds in this kind of market in a big game like that, you know that was the professional side. Clearly it was the wrong side, so a lot of people won't agree, or it's tough to kind of explain now when you see such a blowout. But the professionals, the big groups, were on the Colts.
Yeah, and I'm looking at an email right now from some of the reports I get from the sports books, and the folks at Pinnacle said yesterday their splits as far as the money line was concerned, 83% of the money line bets came in on the Patriots, only 17% on the Colts. And when a game goes the way it does, never really good for the house, especially with it creeping over the total, too, despite the pretty high number at 57.5. And Payne, one last team, I know we wanted to switch gears a little bit. Kansas City, 9 straight covers. This is a side that lost their season opener to the Titans and has really rebounded quite well. And you can make the case maybe the front runner for a wild card, or who knows, maybe they can win the division now as they stand in a flat-footed tie with the Denver Broncos, given that the Chargers have kind of come crashing back to earth a bit.
Got to give credit to Andy Reid. He's doing some great things there. They're able to run the ball. They're able to play possession. The defense really has one issue, and it's stopping the run, but they're great against the pass. They can get pressure. If they're able to build the lead, they're extremely tough to beat. And when you look at this schedule down the road, they still have 2 games against Oakland, so I'd say they have the advantage right now there in the AFC West.
Yeah, it's definitely a team that's very interesting to watch, and of course that Thursday game against Oakland could go a long way in keeping the Chiefs on the right path, a game that we will preview in great detail a few days from now. And Payne, as we look at the board, the betting board, and we kind of reset a little bit first and foremost, gentleman on the other end of the line, he of Payne Insider fame, you can follow him on Twitter there or see all of his work at PayneInsider.com. I'm Todd Furman. Follow me on Twitter at Todd Furman or check out some of my work at my website, ToddsTake.com. And Payne, Browns-Falcons, we look at the look-ahead number for this. The Falcons were a 1.5-point favorite coming into Sunday. That number has kind of ballooned out as we saw the books open at 3. The Falcons at 4-6, hard to even say and do with a straight face, are in a tie for the NFC South right now with the New Orleans Saints. Is it maybe a 6-10 or 7-9 record to be good enough to win that division this year?
Absolutely. 4-6, leading the division. It's pretty crazy to even ponder. We talked about this Atlanta team 2 or 3 weeks ago, and we said, listen, Mike Smith looks like he's out, but the guys like Mike Smith. And if you can find teams that potentially don't have anything to play for, but they like their general, they like their leader, they're going to play for them, and you can find some value. And that's what professionals have done the last 2 weeks. On the look-ahead line, Falcons minus 1.5 with their home field advantage, it looked like the right side. Now you're looking at a 3, potentially trending to 3.5. It's probably, you know, I'm probably not looking at Atlanta anymore. So for me, nothing in this contest right now.
And you look at the rest of the betting board, kind of open it up to you. Any numbers that you were surprised by at all, given the results of what we saw on Sunday versus what some of their look-ahead lines were forecasting?
You know, as crazy as it sounds, there hasn't been a ton of movement when you look at what these look-ahead prices were as to what's on the board right now. One of the largest movers, obviously, was St. Louis and San Diego. The look-ahead, 7. You're now at 5.5, and that's a pretty dramatic drop off that second key number of 7. For me, St. Louis obviously beats Denver, and San Diego looks very lethargic offensively against Oakland. But what I was impressed to see was San Diego's defense. They get Ingram back. They get a little healthier in the secondary. And all of a sudden, it started to look like a defense that we saw the first month and a half of the season, as opposed to what we've seen the last month. And I'm not running to bet St. Louis in this spot. I actually think, you know, San Diego might be the side here as we watch this continue to tick lower and lower.
And you talked about them maybe being a little bit undervalued, and you watch that game in great detail, as you alluded to. San Diego just seemed to be one step slow offensively coming out of the bye week, and maybe they're able to get it all together. Funny to think that the Chargers were the hottest team in the NFL early in the year, covering with alarming regularity, and now some of that luster has since worn off. One of the more interesting games, I guess, for me, Payne, when you look at the NFC West picture and you see Seattle, a 6.5-point favorite against Arizona. I know we didn't talk about Drew Stanton and his performance as the new starter for the Cardinals, but you know, how do we go about handicapping this? Seattle off a loss, you know, 3 games behind Arizona for a division crown at this point.
Yeah, you would have liked this game to mean a little more for Seattle. Arizona continues to win. We talk about this Arizona team. We've been looking for spots to fade them, and they haven't shown up being great spots once game day approaches. We tried it with the Rams a few weeks ago. Rams clear-cut right side, as I alluded to earlier in the podcast. But now you have Stanton, and we've talked about him. He's going to be the better passer than Carson Palmer when it comes to moving the ball deep down the field, not so much underneath. And this number, to me, depicts a lot. I think this trends towards 7. I think Seattle is the right side here. But just when you talk about Seattle's offense right now, it's very limited, and it's tough to lay a number like this, but I think it's Seattle or pass, no doubt, at this point.
And we were joking about it because I know we talked about the over in that Detroit-Arizona game probably being the right side. Said at 14-6, we probably would be kicking ourselves. Lo and behold, somehow that game doesn't get anywhere close to going over. Is that pretty much where the game ended?
Yeah, I mean, you talk about me, and I've bashed him a few times. Matthew Stafford just isn't that guy. He had his big year in his contract year. I think he finished 5th in passer rating. Other than that, you're talking about a guy who's finished 20th, 25th in passer rating. This is an average quarterback at the very, very best. He has so many brain farts. It's just really, really tough to imagine that he can take this Detroit Lions team any further down the road. There's a glaring number that said he hasn't had a road win against an opponent above 500 his entire career. So just paints a picture of Matthew Stafford in that ineptitude of them traveling on the road.
And you're basically saying that this is the perfect time then to bet the Lions when they go on the road to take on the Patriots on Sunday then, right? Is that what you're alluding to, if I can read between the lines here, Mr. Payne?
If ever there was a spot.
Of course, one of those games that we will be talking about on Thursday. And Payne, before we go into our Thursday night, as we both keep saying, Monday night preview of the Steelers and Titans, any games that you think, total, sides, anything that people should be running to maybe get out ahead of the market for this busy slate coming up this Sunday?
I think you'll probably see some under money
enter
the market.
By the way, that was very emphatic. So you seem, over eager to share some of that type of insight right now.
It's Monday, so you kind of got to be careful of what you give away. But St. Louis, San Diego, that total probably should see some under money continue to trickle into the market. I think Hill's extremely limited. We saw after the first few possessions what he was able to do. He's a dink and dunk quarterback. And now you'll get some film on him, and I think that's probably the way the market will shift is towards the under there. And it will be interesting to see where the Sunday night contest goes, Dallas in New York. I think the market will continue to creep up just a little bit, but there will be professional money on the Giants. I think that's probably the right side, barring Eli Manning doesn't throw 5 interceptions again.
Which, by the way, is a big if these days, given Eli's current form. So when you're betting the Giants, you just hope that Eli can, keep himself to only 2 interceptions and give you a great chance to win. I would make the case, too, that I think we will see some money on Tampa. Obviously, hopefully, that number ticks higher to 6.5, maybe making a cheap buy to 7 readily available. And for a game that's already at the key number of 7, that is the Pittsburgh Steelers, a 7-point road favorite at LP Field later this evening, taking on the Titans. This game opened at 4.5, depending on where you look. The total as high as 47. It's come down. So we talked about weather in the forecast, some slight crosswinds. It will be freezing cold at kickoff. And again, the stat that everyone wants to talk about, Dick LeBeau matched up against a rookie quarterback.
Yeah, we've seen a lot of movement in this. We know some professional money did enter the market early, taking Pittsburgh. The question is it real? What's the intent of the position? In a 4.5, 5, there really doesn't need to be a whole lot of intent. It makes an easy middle situation, side situation coming back with Tennessee. But for the purposes of this podcast, gun to head, I'm looking towards Tennessee. When you really break this game down, Tennessee has the better defense. Really, the lone spot they lack is the quarterback matchup. Mettenberger has been better than expected. He's definitely hasn't been asked to do a whole lot. But Monday night, you get you're on national TV. Your season's over. I think we see some effort from Tennessee. They should be able to run the ball a little bit with Sankey. A lot of defensive injuries for Pittsburgh without Shazier still. Without Polamalu, Ike Taylor's still not back. So that defense for Pittsburgh is extremely limited. And I think we see a decent game plan here from Tennessee where it allows them to keep this game close. Now, obviously, we have seen some money, I think, enter the market on Pittsburgh. It'll be interesting to see where this closes. I know we're talking right now from the public tick account about 8.5 out of every 10 bets coming in on the road favorite. There's a reason casinos are built in the desert, and it's because of games like these.
I was going to say the reason the casinos are built in the desert is because of the slot machines and tables. So if you want to give the sports books credit, we can definitely do that.
Penny slots, baby.
I know that is your chosen path when you come out to Las Vegas, but you make some great points. You talk about some of the professionals definitely laying the number, knowing that there was going to be a chance for buyback on this at 7. It will be very intriguing to see where this number closes if there's a a little bit of resistance at 7. I'd be absolutely shocked if the number got up to 7.5 beyond some of the recreational books that take more weekend warrior type bets than anything else. But a game, again, that, you know, personally won't have a position in, and by the sounds of it, doesn't appear that you will either be going to the window with something you feel all that confident in.
Yeah, unless I can get a decent price 7 or 7.5. I mean, I think the dog's the side if you really are inclined to needing action on this. And for me, you know, it's different as we invest professionally. But, you know, if this is just something that's your hobby, there's nothing wrong with that, and you're looking to put $25 down on the game instead of going to a movie, I think Tennessee's probably your side here. And I would wait till as late as humanly possible to lay this if you are dealing with a public book.
Definitely makes a ton of sense, and as we always say, sometimes the best bets that you make are the ones you don't make at all. So just because it's on Monday night, there's plenty of action to get you through the week on Tuesday and Wednesday before Thursday night's showdown between Kansas City and Oakland. For Payne Insider, we thank you, as always, for listening to Bet the Board podcast. And remember, use the hashtag AskBetTheBoard. We'll be happy to address any of those intriguing and pressing questions regarding the NFL and the wide world of gambling for Thursday's edition. Best of luck tonight with your selections on Pittsburgh, Tennessee, and we'll be right back with you Thursday, and hopefully we'll be able to see you at the window.